Welcome back to the A-List. I'm pleased today to be joined by Behdad. He is a marketing connector, formerly an engineer with TELUS here in Greater Vancouver. Really interesting because he had that safe, comfortable position and chose to pursue the entrepreneurial path. Thanks for joining us today, Behdad.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So you've had the rare combination of being deeply technical and deeply human. Where do you think that came from?
That's a great question. I think the technical aspect, I've always been very logical in nature. Typically, whenever I see a problem, I kind of try to reverse engineer solving it. And obviously, going to engineering school solidified those skills as I went through it. Growing up, though, I wasn't allowed out very much in high school. So I was kind of like at home. And the way that I would actually connect with people was like through MSN Messenger.
MSN.
So understanding people behind, like, what are your problems? What are you dealing with? And that's kind of like how I connected with people. And then when I was allowed out after grade 12, there's a whole different story on that, but I just really wanted to connect with people, and I was really good at it. I like to make friends. I like to connect friends to each other. Like, it's just something that's always been a part of me.
Yeah, I love that. Now, the MSN Messenger days were fun. It was sort of get home from school and then hop on and have some conversations with people. Did I get any new messages? Now we're almost inundated with the amount of social platforms and people messaging on them, but the true human connection, I think, is the important part of all that. So when you became a sales engineer at TELUS, which is already a somewhat unusual combination of technical and human skills, how did you discover that you were actually really good at talking to people and not just building things?
Yeah, it was kind of funny because when I went to engineering, I didn't really know what I wanted to do in the end. And luckily through engineering, you can do a lot of co-op. So you can go work at a company, get a feel for it, and then just can see what works and what doesn't work for you. Mm-hmm. And I remember someone saying, hey, did you know like a sales engineer existed? Because I had gone through, you know, being a QA tester, I've done programming, I've done all that stuff, but nothing like really like lit me up inside, you know? Like, yeah, this is great, but like, am I gonna sit behind a computer for the rest of my life and just look at code? Wasn't my idea of fun, though I have a lot of friends that is their idea of fun. And someone was like, hey, did you know that like a sales engineering role exists? And a company called TELUS has it. Do you wanna go to one of their open houses, get a sense of it? And when I went, I was like, oh, interesting. Like, there's all these roles, but the sales engineering role was like such a balance of like understanding the technical aspects of a business and then bridging that to what the customer actually needs. Like, so you have to talk to customers, understand what they need, and then match them with the technical aspect. And I was like, oh, cool. I don't have to do the software programming and stuff like that. Like, I just got to connect them to what internet provider makes sense, what voice system makes sense, what cloud system makes sense. And that got me excited. So I kind of like, after that open house, I knew like that was my goal and that's what I wanted to do. And then I spent the next, I think it was like close to 7 years just chasing that.
And at what point in that 7 year period did you think, well, this is great, but I kind of want to build something that I have a bit more ownership on?
Yeah. You know, the entrepreneurship path wasn't actually something I was ever looking for. I actually really liked being a sales engineer. That's like, I think the weird thing about me being an entrepreneur. Is a lot of people are like, well, I don't like the 9-to-5. I want to go run my own thing. I want to go travel, do all this stuff. That wasn't really me. I was more curious. So for me, the engineering job was really cool because I had all this technology to constantly learn. I always felt I was behind. But on the outside of work, like, I've been a personal trainer. I've built out financial courses on how to invest in the index funds. I even tried to at some point start like a company with four of my friends, like some from TELUS actually, and some from SFU, and bring them together and be like, hey, what if we made like an app where we choose the dish we want, and then you get the restaurants that have that dish as like their best item, you'd be able to go to it. So like, if I wanted the best smash burger, where would I go? If I wanted the best like cheesecake, where would I go? We tried to run that app for about a month, and I realized, oh man, like working with like four different people is way too much work. So my business, the marketing business, kind of like came up when I took like this $500 course, and it was like, hey, you can make $50,000 a month in passive income doing SEO. And I was like, that's super interesting. I don't know what SEO is, but $50,000 passive income makes a lot of sense to me. So I took that course and realized how to build websites, Google Ads, and SEO, and realized I hated building those for customers, like very quickly. And then I had a friend of mine basically just say, hey, B, how about you send me your website business? I'll give you a percentage and you don't have to do the work. And I was like, oh, I became this connector again. And so I started doing that. And that was like the start of CJAM and the start of like the entrepreneurship journey. But I was still doing it while working full time.
Yeah, I think that oftentimes is some of the best way to build a business is when you have sort of that safe and stable setup, test out a few different things, what your hypothesis might be and what could be a business. And you clearly have had some success doing that. And how long were you doing the connecting business before you realized that you could exit your full-time gig?
Yeah. So it took about 3.5 years where it finally like took off to a point. I remember at the 3-year mark, I was really questioning my choices. I was like, all right, I'm working full-time as a senior sales engineer now, and I'm working and trying to run this business at the same time. And it's a lot. Like to do that for 3.5 years, mm-hmm. It was like 6-7 days a week, 10 to 12 hour days. I was waking up at 5 a.m. sometimes, just like getting work done. It was a lot. And I remember at 3 years, I was like, okay, I'm making like $4,000 a month and I put so much effort into this thing. Like, is this worth it, right? And as a sales engineer, like you're not making a small salary, right? Like I was making comfortable 6 figures. I didn't like have to work super hard. I was doing all the right things. And so I had a thing in that 3rd year where I was like, okay, if I can't increase this, maybe at the end of the year, I decide if this was worth doing or not. Mm-hmm. That 3rd to 4th year, my business 10X'd. Like the flywheel took effect. More and more people knew who I was and what I did, and the right customers came in where I was like, oh wow, I went from making like $4,000 a month to $40,000 a month in just a year. Mm-hmm. And at that point I was like, okay, I got a year of money in the business in terms of like my engineering salary. I'm already making $40,000 a month. I think it's time to like put my full effort into this and just see what happens. So it was never a thing of like, I want to be an entrepreneur, I have to do it. It was just more like, it just happened, just putting the reps constantly over and over again.
Yeah, I love that because it's a bit natural, right? So you did it because it sort of was a something you clearly were good at. And then once you saw some level of success, you thought, oh, push a little bit further, see if I can make this work. And then you chose, it's very logical as opposed to some entrepreneurs that like will be working on something forever and they're getting anywhere with it. And meanwhile, their family's suffering. It's like, hey, you need to do what's best for your family. You were able to, put in those reps and make it work. So well done.
Thanks.
So most people who have that corporate job and maybe have that side hustle, the challenge for them is ultimately pulling the plug from the day job. And was that choice difficult for you? And if what was going through your mind when you made that decision?
Yeah, it was difficult. Even with the safety net and the amount of money that I was making a month, there's always that fear of like, okay, you're going into uncertainty. And no matter what you do, I think that's always going to be there. Like some people are more comfortable in uncertainty. I definitely was not. I was an engineer. Like what we are built to do is to reduce uncertainty, right? So the exact opposite. And so when I kind of went into it, I had to deal a lot with like the personal growth aspect of that, right? And at that point, I've already been done in counseling since I was like 22 or 23. Because I always trying to like understand how I work internally. And I've read a ton of books and I'm always curious and I've done a ton of courses. But until you're put into that environment to deal with the actual situation, that's where the real growth happens. So it was always kind of like uncomfortable for me, but I knew I had to make the choice because you could see the one path and it was like, okay, I knew what the ladder looked like on the corporate side. And then on the other side, you're like, okay, well, it is uncertain, but like, let's see what happens. So there's a bit of excitement in that too. Like fear and excitement always kind of play with one another.
Totally.
Right? And so I made the jump. It's been crazy because like every single year, the revenue's been going up every single year. Even though you have these setbacks, you're like, oh no, like, is this thing gonna last, right? And it's just like working through that uncertainty that you kind of just find like the full expression of like who you are.
And when you fully committed, how did that impact your business and your life?
Yeah, when I was fully into it, I no longer had to take like calls for TELUS and calls for CJM at the same time. Like my full focus was on the business. And it's like, before I even like made the leap, I already had some employees underneath CJM, right? Like I had an assistant, I had a designer, a developer. Like my whole theory was like, as I'm building my business, and if the sales engineering job pays for life, then I can reinvest the money in the business to kind of build a team out, right? Mm-hmm. So instead of me doing, you know, $10 or $15 tasks, I'm still gonna do the engineering job and apply someone else to do the $10 or $15 tasks until like it gets to a point where the things that are left over are only things I can push forward, right? Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of like how I did that shift.
Yep. No, very, very similar to how I've approached business and life. So you've assessed over 1,000 marketing agencies now, Baydad. What's something that sets you apart, or how do you determine of those 1,000 who you're going to end up referring business to now? Because that's quite a few to keep in the back of your brain.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. So you have to build systems out. So I have a whole model of like how I vet agencies. Typically, it's like 4 steps. The first one is always jumping on an initial call. You can tell so much from a 30-minute conversation, especially when you've had that conversation 1,000 times. Mm-hmm. So I'm typically looking for like these little red flags, right? So people will say, well, we've only been around for 3 years, but I used to, you know, do marketing consulting, or I used to work for an agency. I'm like, 3 years is not enough time for an agency to really settle in, right? Any business, really.
No.
Systems, processes, hiring people, like, it takes time.
Yeah.
So that's to be like a really quick red flag where I'm like, you haven't been in the game long enough for it to make sense for my network. But then you'll hear a whole bunch of other things where people are like, well, we've grown 100% this year. We're planning to grow another 100% this year. And I'm like, you're a seven-figure agency almost. Growing 100%, you're not a SaaS-based business. You're a people business.
Totally.
Right? And it's very hard to scale people. And so those are typically like red flags for me too, where I hear someone's growing way too fast, because most service-based businesses in the agency space grow like 15 to 20% a year, and that's like a good year, yep. Right? And there's a whole bunch of other stuff you kind of like pay attention to, like how they organize their teams. Are they onshore, offshore? Will they tell you the truth right from the beginning that they're onshore or offshore?
Yeah.
Right? I was just talking to an agency today, and they're like, we have 10 members. I'm like, great, like, what are the breakdowns? And they're like, this, this, and this. And we also do every marketing service. And I was looking at the roster, and I was like, you have 5 account managers. You have like 2 creative people. You're the founder and then the FCMO. And one other thing, how are you doing 16 different services? And just, you don't have the manpower for
100%.
It, right? And so they go, oh yeah, by the way, like, we have some contractors. These guys are also contractors. Oh, really? You only have 4 full-time employees, right? Like, there's all these little things that, like, once you're aware of it and you know how to ask like the level 2 and level 3 questions, like, you'll uncover a lot pretty quickly.
Yeah, and because you're a specialist, you've encountered this through probably trial and error as well.
A lot of times you're like, oh, they didn't tell me that. I probably should have asked that question.
Right.
And you, like, next time you know what to ask.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing you kind of learn too, I guess, just even on the business and marketing side, when you meet so many people, you realize, one, businesses are essentially broken entities. Like, as they grow, they keep breaking, right? Mm-hmm. You get to 20 people, you break. You get to 50 people, you break. And marketing agencies are also businesses. So therefore, essentially, they break as well. So the funny part of like what I do is I realize, I was like, oh, I'm taking one broken business with another broken business and going, you two should talk at the right time so that you can both grow together and get to like the next level of broken, you know? Yeah. Like, and it's kind of funny to see it that way.
Yeah, 100%. But it's the same could be said when you are going to the gym, like, you need to like break your previous record in order to get bigger, right?
Exactly.
I think it's the same in business. Now, you've seen a variety of different leaders over the course of your career. What would you say are some trends or some things you're noticing for standout leadership, particularly among our demographic?
Yeah, I've thought about this a lot, and I got trained really well with Intellis. Like, they create amazing leaders. It's because they actually put a lot of money into their leadership, and a lot of it's around coaching and emotional intelligence, like really understanding kind of like who you are, and then coaching from that place. So a lot of like the one-on-ones that I have with my team are actually like replications of what Telus taught us, right? Mm. Jump on a call, understand who's across from you, right? Like, it's my employee, but it's like, I'm not there to solve all their problems. I'm there to enable and coach them to be able to solve the problems that they have. And so if I'm a leader and I'm taking on every single problem they have and giving them a solution, they're never gonna think for themselves,
yeah,
right? But if you provide a very comfortable, stable environment where it's like, you can make mistakes, that's totally fine. But come with me with like other things you're gonna try to fix that mistake, mm-hmm. right? So I found like great leaders are amazing coaches. And so any kind of training you can do around that, one, to either get coaching for yourself, because once you work with a really strong coach, then you start kind of getting ideas of like, oh, this is how I can coach other people, or how to ask the right questions, or I learned this about myself. There's probably some variation of this in the people that I'm working with, right? And so I find like the best leaders really have a good sense of who they are and really, really good coaches, and just there to support their team.
So is that one of the questions you ask when you're partnering with an agency, is who's coaching you, or where do you get your information from?
I don't ask the coaching question, which I probably should. But I do, like, I am paying attention to the founders and being like, okay, what kind of founders are these? Like, are they thinking about things? Do they have values and benefits? Like, if they don't have values in their agency, that's a big red flag as well, right? Mm-hmm. Because as an agency grows or as a business grows, if you don't have values, it's what you're hiring your team on. It's why you're picking up customers. Everything is structured around that, right? And you've seen like in businesses where someone's like, I really connect with the values and the mission of this business, right? Like, they're basically going, my values are X, and this business also has the same values as me. I'm willing to give my time and effort and energy to help this business grow. And so when an agency founder or owner doesn't have those things, you can typically tell like they're not gonna scale past a certain point because things are gonna break. They don't have the culture to grow to the level they wanna grow to. And so I'm typically paying attention for those things. And it's part of my questionnaire, it's like my deep dives, when I'm doing like my 30 to 35 questions on agencies, to be like, what are your values? How do you structure around them? That type of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess having the ability to be humble enough to recognize that you don't know, have all the answers, and willing to be coachable.
Yes.
Now, you're known in the community as someone who's very self-aware. I think you attributed some of that to some therapy you've taken, journaling, personal development. In a business that sort of glorifies like hustle and work hard culture, why do you think going inward is actually a competitive advantage?
I think a lot of us are doing things very reactively. And I've always kind of structured my life to be more proactive in it, because things will always come at you. And if I think you don't have the time to like look inward and understand like, why am I here? What's the mission? What am I trying to do? You're just going to do stuff and then end up on a certain mountain and at the top and go, this isn't what I wanted to do. And I've been in enough mastermind rooms where I've, you know, I got people around me that are doing $80 million a year, $140 million a year, like, and they're still not happy. So the question kind of for me was like, okay, I got to a place in my business where I was making a certain amount of money and I was like, I don't need to make more. What's next? And the answer wasn't more money. So I started digging internally and going, what matters to me? And it's been a question I've been asking for like 2.5, 3 years, right? And I find the more you understand internally, like who you are and what you're trying to do, the more proactive you are in the things that you're building versus being reactive in them. And I think right now everything becomes so reactive because there's so much information. So if you're not able to center yourself and pause and go like, what's actually happening, right? I think you become at a disadvantage because it's just going to get faster.
Well, then I have to ask, what are you trying to do here, Vedad?
Yeah, so one of the things that I'm doing, I have a whole concept around amplified relationships, and my goal is to help 1 million people connect deeper with one another. And so my whole model around that is teaching people how to build deep connection in less than 10 minutes. And so that's kind of like my purpose. And when you look at everything that I do, from CJAM, which is like connecting with people and connecting people together, I run business dinners in Vancouver as well, right? That's all around connection. People go like, why are you doing this? I'm like, I just want to bring good humans together and put them in a room. Do you get business from this? No, not really. I don't really do business that much in Vancouver, to be honest. Like most of my business is in the States. Mm-hmm. But you can sense that like, I know that my like purpose here is to help people connect and help people connect with one another. And I really love it.
Well, I appreciate that even though your business is primarily in the US, you spend time in your local community bringing people together, because I think there's certainly a lack of that in Vancouver. And I would say across North America right now, people are very tied up in their devices and sort of their feeds, their algorithms, and less connected to the local community. So thanks for doing that. And I think Steve Parr, I saw him post something recently. I think he was at one of your
dinners. Yeah, he's at one of my dinners. Yeah. And then we also do like some fun stuff. Like on Sunday, we got 10 entrepreneurs together and we went and did like laser tag. Don't think like laser, like it was like legit laser tag. Adult laser tag, multiple levels. And it was crazy because after I finished that, I was like, man, I feel like so much joy and happiness. Like I think as adults, we forget to play sometimes. You know, go, that's silly. It's like, yeah, we'll sit there, journal, and hit the gym and do all these productive things. But it's like, sometimes you just need to go out and play with your friends, you know?
Totally. Whatever gets those neurons firing in the brain and gets you thinking and challenging you to think differently. So yeah, I love that. Yeah. Now, you lost a co-founder early on in your business, and you had to let go of a long-term employee in the past. Both situations came down to broken trust. How do you look to rebuild trust with people? And how do you know it's time to call it quits?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So whenever it comes to like trust for me, like especially in those situations, I don't take them very personally. You know, people go through a lot of stuff and there's a lot of things happening that I don't personally get to see, right? I kind of just look at it in terms of like, how could I have shown up differently in this relationship? So especially that employee, that one hurt. Like that one was not great. In terms of like the same day I was actually picking up the keys to my new house and this was happening and it was like very stressful. And so I just like, it was funny, I picked up the keys, was standing in my house and I was like, you know what? I'm just gonna take the rest of the day off. I'm gonna go sit at a lunch place. I'm taking my journal and I'm just gonna journal and just like bring everything out. So I went through all the emotions and stuff like that and was like, all right, this is just kind of what it was. Like I let a couple things go in terms of like things I was checking up on her and she would lie to me and I was like, oh, I didn't pick it up soon enough, right? And I gave her like multiple chances. And I was like, no, that's just me as a leader. I should know when I should call it quits and move on. I kind of held on to that relationship too long.
Yeah.
But like moving forward, like building trust with other people, I just make sure that I've vetted over 1,000 agencies. I've met a lot of people. So I'm always like being aware of like asking questions and getting better at asking questions so that, you know, I start every relationship on trust once it's started. And it's not like you need to gain my trust. Like it's there for you to lose essentially. And if you lose it, that's on you, not on me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's the best way to go about it. We've certainly always had, all business owners, they have had improper hires and people that come off great and then perhaps don't deliver on how they originally presented. But we also, as business owners, tend to be loyal to the people who have supported us. And mm-hmm. so it's always a fine balance.
Yes.
When you think of like your favorite leaders or people you aspire to, what are perhaps your favorite two or three?
So the director at TELUS, I won't name her because I don't want to do it, but she was like one of the best leaders I've ever had. Super like understood you personally. And she was the type of person that like I could always just like skip my manager level to go talk to her, and vice versa. Like she'd share things with me that even my leadership wouldn't know at certain times. Like there was this trust that was built, right? And I remember this one time I was actually going on a kayaking trip, and for all my friends around me, like, oh, that's super exciting, you're gonna have a ton of fun and blah blah blah, she was the one person that went, that must be stressful for you, because she knew like my background of having Crohn's and things like that. Like this was actually me doing a trip that was uncomfortable for me.
Totally.
And I was putting myself in an uncomfortable situation. And she caught up on that, like, right away. Even, like, my closest people didn't, right? And that just built such a deep connection, like, just knowing that your leader knows you that well. So she was awesome as a leader. And then I have mentors. Like, so one of my mentors, the reason he became my mentor is because I watched a bunch of his, like, Facebook posts. And he talked about how he'd go to a conference, speak, go to his kid's soccer game, fly back. Go to his kid's soccer game and then fly back to the conference again. And I was like, this is a guy running like a 60 person marketing agency, does well, like close to probably 8 figures. But he's put his family and his like his people ahead of everyone else, and he will show it based on his actions.
Yeah.
And I was like, in that moment, I was like, I gotta make this guy my mentor somehow. Like I like who he is and I like his values. And it's just those people that are like, they know who they are, they know what their values are, and they don't like shortcut it in any way. You know, yeah. And so I like to keep those kind of like leaders around me, and those are who I essentially aspire to be when I'm leading my team.
I love it. Yeah, and the fact that you have personal relationships, these are people that you can bounce ideas off of, and they can challenge you in your journey as a leader.
100%.
So you've built your business successfully bootstrapped. So congratulations. You didn't have to raise capital. You didn't have to move to San Francisco. You were able to stay here in Vancouver without, you know, chasing the American dream. So was that a conscious choice? Did you intend to stay here, or would you have moved to the States if it meant more opportunity?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. So I think I would always stay in Canada. My wife, as you know, is an immigration lawyer, and she doesn't want to move down to the States. So that would never really happen. And my family's here, right? Like I moved to the Netherlands, as we talked about before. One of the biggest reasons we moved back is because my family's in Vancouver. Family's quite a big value for mine. There is a way more business in the U.S. I do travel quite a bit. So every month I'm down in the U.S. typically. I'm going to be doing less of that moving forward. But I like building in Canada, one, because my family's here and I like the environment. And it's just like, it just feels kind of safer. I don't know how else to explain that, right? And in the U.S., like you can go down on like a Tuesday and there'd be 40 CEOs in a room. Would my business do way better? Yeah. But at the same time, money really isn't the purpose anymore. It's more around just like human connection, bringing people together. And I can do that from here. Plus, like we have the most amazing mountains and sports and things that we can do here too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm with you. I chose to stay here for very similar reasons. So I got a young daughter now and a lot of my family's here. So great place to build business. And even though you might not get the biggest yacht, you can have the deepest relationships and live a pretty balanced life, which I think that's what we're looking for.
Yeah, I think so.
Now, when you think about the next generation of leadership, so as sort of the current leaders retire and our generation sort of takes over, what are some of the key values or characteristics you're hoping that we can shift?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at like the millennial generation, I think we've done so much work on ourselves already at the ages of like 30. So I'm actually really excited to just kind of like have people there to hold space, coach, like help guide people and their employees, like, and just in a better way in terms of like being able to understand like who they are and allowing them to become the best versions of themselves versus just being like, hey, you have a task, finish the task. That is part of the work, but there's also this whole inner work aspect of it that I think we understand. Like whenever my employees are like, I'm sick or I have this thing going, I'm like, cool, like go take care of that. Message me in 2 days. Like my business is not going away in the next couple of days. So like take care of yourself and just really realizing that like you're dealing with people, right? And people have emotions, they have their own things going on. And I'm just hoping that like as leaders, we embody more of that, like understanding, like, yeah, we can, you know, like the parent that's like, you don't wanna let them down, but they're there and you know, they're always gonna support you. Like kind of like that kind of environment without guilt and shame attached to it.
Yeah, it sounds a little bit more empathy for the people that are in our care, as opposed to, you know, people that work for us.
Yes.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And I think a lot of that comes from the fact that we've worked in environments where it felt like we were just a, you know, a cog in the machine, and it isn't great.
Yeah, no, it's not that fun.
if a younger Canadian came to you today and said, hey, I want to build a career doing something like what you're doing, what's some advice you would pass along to them?
It's a good question. So I think if someone that's younger, as my advice typically is, one, if you know what you really want to do, like, and you're like passionate about it, just go into it 100%, you'll find your way to get there. But most of us don't get that luxury, right? We don't really know what we want to do or what we want to do moving forward. And so the second piece of that is like, cool, just do the next thing that's the most interesting to you, right? Like, get as much experience as you can doing different things. And at some point, something will stick. Like, you'll start realizing, oh, I did like these four different jobs and they were so different, but now I'm like so uniquely positioned to do this thing and I really like this thing, right? So I think you kind of have like two paths there is like, you know, my little brother or my wife, like they really knew who they were and what they wanted to do and they just went straight into it. I had to take the longer route where I was just like a generalist. I just liked doing a whole bunch of different things. And as you do those different things, it starts kind of like unveiling itself of like, oh, this is what I'm really good at, right? And even today, like there's stuff where I'm like, okay, my thing's around human connection. Will it be me doing the presentation on how people connect deeper? Will it be running events? Will it be like, I don't know, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. So there's just like this like fun, playful exploration aspect that you kind of have to accept as you're going through it. And it might even be one of those things where I'm like 70 and I'm like, I'm still trying to figure out what I want to do, right? But I've tried a lot of stuff along the way.
As long as you're moving forward and doing things, you're learning, you're building relationships. You know, when I have interns working with me, the same thing I say is you're going to gain some skills in whatever your job is here, but the people you're going to meet and the person you'll become will open you up to that next opportunity. And as long as you continue to do right by those around you, you'll continue to grow. So it sounds like that's you and I have lived a similar life in that regard, Baydad.
Yeah, no, it sounds like it. And I would say also one other thing is like your network is so important. And you hear this all the time, but as someone who's probably like connected with over 4,000 people, I will say it's extremely important. Like the people that I know and the connections that I've made. So it's not just about having people in a phone book. It's like truly having connections with people.
Yeah.
Man, it's the most comforting feeling to know like, cool. Like if anything ever happened to my business or I need to reach out to someone or having a tough thing, like there's someone in my phone that's going to answer my call and provide me like information that's going to be invaluable, right? I've gotten into $50,000 rooms and I didn't have to pay for them. I've gotten into, you know, $5,000 or $6,000 tickets for free because of the connections that I have. So I know people always talk about how important network is, but just like when you meet someone that you really like and you're connected with, build that deep connection, because you never know how it's going to pan out in the future for you.
It's so true. Some of the best relationships I have now started off as just simply friendships that have evolved into sort of business opportunities that neither of us had any intention of that from the get-go. And I think that's if you're just open-minded and are a good person, good things will come to you. Okay, so Baydad, if we were meeting 30 years from today and you're looking back on your career and you're thinking, man, I'm really happy I did X, what sort of legacy would you want to leave for future generations?
It's a great question. It's funny because I have this sheet where I have about 25 things that people want to do in life, and one of them was legacy, and I ranked it very low. Like, I didn't really care about what people thought about me afterwards because I'm like, I'm going to be gone. You know, like, no one's going to remember me. But if I was thinking about it, I did watch this really interesting Netflix series. It's called The Black Godfather. And I forgot the guy's name, legacy, but I know him in my head. And he was this guy that was just underneath it all, connecting people together that needed to be connected to move things forward. Mm-hmm. So he had like Obama, Bill Clinton on his thing. He had all these like amazing rappers and he was just this connector for them. Like he would go into the Coca-Cola person's office and be like, you need to sell more Coca-Cola to black people. Like, he's a black guy himself, right? But he was the guy that was moving and shifting things. No one knew how he was making money, but they just knew that he would remove roadblocks for the people that he believed in.
Right.
So for me, it's like one of the reasons I'm building the network and the connections that I have is like when I see someone doing something that I'm like, this is going to change the world or this is really impactful or I really want to see you win, I just want to be able to open the door for connections for them to be like, here are the five people you need to talk to take you to the next level. And I'm not talking just like marketing agency wide. It'd be from like investors or people that are mentors or whatever it is. So that's the kind of thing I want to leave behind is like, oh, Baydad was just this guy who knew everyone and he would just open doors for you when you needed it.
I mean, that's an incredible legacy because there's a ton of roadblocks between people's dreams and reality. And by giving people the opportunity to shoot their shot, you're giving them the chance to reach their dreams. So well done.
Thanks.
Awesome. So Baydad, if any of our listeners want to reach you, where's the best place for them to follow you?
The two best places, one is on LinkedIn. So look up my full name, Baydad Jamshidi. Or if you're going to be reaching out to me on the business side of things, so on my website, www.cjammarketing.com. And there's a whole bunch of resources at the bottom as well for business owners and anyone that's like looking for questions to ask marketing agencies, red flags to look for. There's all this free stuff at the bottom on the resource section. And I hope they enjoy it.
Beautiful. Well, Baydad, thank you so much for being here today. Really appreciated hearing your story, and hopefully you'll be able to inspire others to pursue similar entrepreneurship journeys. And I look forward to us continuing to build our businesses going forward. So thank you, Baydad.
Thanks for having me.